An air and sea search is continuing for possible survivors of the Edmund Fitzgerald, a 729-foot ore carrier, which apparently broke apart and sunk last night on Lake Superior. The ship and its 29-man crew vanished in a storm with 80-mile-an-hour winds and wave heights up to 25 feet. All that has been found is an oil slick and some debris.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down up the big lake they call Get Sugar Mid. The lake, it is said, never gives up for dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. But the load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That big ship and true was a bum to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big breeders go, it was bigger than most, with the crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. And later that night when the ship's bell rang, it'd be the north wind they'd been feeling.
In 1976, Gordon Lightfoot actually recorded the song, the haunting ballad that was entitled The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The Edmund Fitzgerald, it was a real ship. And Lightfoot's song was actually a tribute to the shipwreck and to the men who lost their lives during it. The Edmund Fitzgerald was a giant ore freighter that was 729 feet in length. It was the greatest carrier on the Great Lakes from 1958 until 1971. The Fitzgerald was labeled the Queen of the Lakes. On November 10th, 1975, the Fitzgerald was hauling a heavy load of ore to Detroit, Michigan when it ran into a severe storm. The storm generated waves that were between 27 and 35 feet in height. During the evening hours, the ship disappeared from the radar screens. Apparently, it sank in only a matter of minutes. It now rests in the bottom of Lake Superior, broken in two with the bow upright and the stern upside down, still loaded with its cargo and the 29 crew that were on board. It is a fact of nature that the inland waters, they possess a special kind of treachery. Sometimes due to the geography, inland waters are more subject to violent changes in weather. And although the Sea of Galilee is only 5 miles wide and 13 miles long, it has a history of some terrible storms. The fact that the Sea of Galilee, get this, is actually 600 feet below sea level. And great storms develop when the cold air and the warm air, they kind of meet together down in that basin. See, that was the situation that was developing as the disciples, they set out across the Sea of Galilee with Jesus after he had finished speaking. As we continue our series today in Luke, the investigative gospel, we're going to pick up at Luke chapter 8, verses 22 through 25. And we've taken about a month and a half off as we've gone through Thanksgiving and then the Advent season. Our text, and you can follow along in verse 22 of chapter 8, or it's up here and you can read along this way if you'd like. But our text reads like this. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came up on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked each other, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water." And they obey him. See, it's been a long day of ministry for Jesus. It began with confrontations and it continued amidst the press of the crowds against him. And so as his day draws to an end, Jesus has moved to the stern of the boat where he has apparently collapsed into a deep sleep. The disciples, in obedience to his command, they hoist the sail and they begin the 5-mile trip across the lake, across the sea. When very unexpectedly, and according to Matthew's account, it actually says suddenly, you know, immediately, out of nowhere, they were in the midst of this terrible storm. Matthew uses the word seismos, which literally means an earthquake. He uses that to describe the power and the force of the storm. Today I want you to see with me some of the great principles that can be drawn from this story in our message that is titled, There is Purpose in the Storms. Now, sometimes we face storms in our lives, don't we? As we sit here in this nice warm sanctuary in these comfortable chairs, it's easy to look outside and to have good thoughts about the world taking place outside of us, around us. But you know how life can be. There can be, and there probably will be, darker, more difficult days than today. But this story that we're going through in the life of Jesus and his disciples, in the boat, upon the sea, it conveys another world, a world where storms arise out of nowhere and life itself is put in peril. If you have ever suffered from a life-threatening disease, then you know that world. You know, the once placid lake of your life becomes a storm-tossed, angry, raging sea that is filled with chaos and turmoil. And this story that we're going through is just about that. You know, when the physician comes back with a bad report, or when you're startled in the night by a late phone call, and the voice on the other side says, I'm afraid I have some bad news. I remember a little over 4 years ago, it was a Sunday evening, and the choir was practicing getting ready for a musical for Christmas. I was kind of puttering around doing some stuff around here, and I got this phone call. It says, your mom is being rushed to the hospital. You need to get up here quick. So I immediately kind of packed things up here, jumped in the Avalon, told Lisa I was leaving, and made the 3.5-4-hour drive up to Everett where my mom was in the hospital. Tell you what, that is a long drive. Then the waves, they begin to beat on the boat, and it seems as if we're sinking, and you cry out, Lord, don't you care that we are perishing? On my drive up there, I spent the time praying, and I didn't know what was going on. And I said, God, what can we do? How can you help? Would you please intervene? And I just didn't know how to do anything. The whole point of the story and of this parable is that storms happen. An analysis of the storms in our lives reveals that sometimes they're brought on by our own stupidity, our own sins. Sometimes they're caused by bad decisions we make. Sometimes the storms may be caused by the bad decisions of other people. Sometimes they just seem to happen, and we have no idea why. But no matter what storms come up in our lives, we can always call on Jesus. See, James tells us the purpose of trials is to test and to deepen our faith. In James chapter 1, verse 2 and 3, he says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Sometimes, when we are in this storm, we may think that we're out of God's will. Perhaps you thought that, or maybe you've even been taught that your life would be smooth sailing with Jesus in your boat. You thought that with Jesus there, there's not going to be any storms, no unmanageable waves, no fear. But you know what? That's just not true. If you've ever lived for very long, then you know that. And based on some of your own experiences, you can testify to that. But perhaps when you're in there, you're thinking, then there must be something wrong with me. I must have done something wrong. The truth is that the Bible doesn't teach us that or even promise us that. even believers, when they're following Christ's bidding, when they're following His commands, when they're following His directions, they may face hardships. For example, in our story, Jesus' disciples were doing God's will when they're taking Jesus across the lake. See, He'd even commanded them to do that. And yet, they're buffeted by this dreadful tempest. And they seem to be in danger of drowning. A storm and Christ on board? It seems like a contradiction. Wouldn't His presence in our lives ensure a peaceful journey? No, not at all. See, you can find a storm and you can be right in the center of God's will. The disciples did. Notice that the disciples were in the midst of the storm, not because they had disobeyed Jesus Christ, but because they had obeyed. They were following His commands and they end up right in the storm. Needless to say, though, fear gripped the disciples because they did not trust Jesus' words. If they had only been able to pause and think for a moment, then they would have remembered what He had said. He said, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." Let us go over to the other side of the lake. He didn't say, "Let us go to the middle of the lake and be drowned." See, they had no need to fear when they were with Him, because His intentions were to be on the other side of the lake. See, Jesus had a plan. The thing is, the disciples didn't know what all the plan was. And even though the disciples had no way of knowing it during that storm, it was a divinely appointed vehicle to teach them about God and the power of His presence in their lives. Without difficulties, without trials, without stresses, and maybe even some failures, we would never grow to be what the Lord wants us to be. Without adversity in our lives, we would be insufferably self-centered, proud, one-dimensional, and empty people. Faith must be tested before it can be trusted. Faith must be tested before it can be trusted. Sometimes when we're in the midst of this storm, we may think that God doesn't care. Now, the parallel account of this story that's actually found in Mark chapter 4 tells us that Jesus was in the stern and He's sleeping on a cushion. Now, although in just a few moments He would get up and He would calm the storm with some extraordinary display of divine power, at this very moment, He slept in a weary human body. To the disciples, however, it seemed as if Jesus was unaware or unconcerned about their plight. Doesn't Jesus know? Or doesn't Jesus care? Or as Gordon Lightfoot said in his ballad, we didn't get to that part of it, if you've heard it before, but he said of the Edmund Fitzgerald, "Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes into hours?" See, we mistakenly conclude that we are alone, that no one cares, not even God. No one knows what is happening to us or even how we are feeling. While these seasoned sailors were panicking because of the intensity of the storm, Jesus is fast asleep. He is asleep, seemingly unconcerned, quite detached, indifferent to their plight. Isn't it true that at times when we're in the midst of the storm, we feel just like that? When we're in the midst of a crisis of one form or another, and it seems that Jesus just doesn't care. He just doesn't seem to be interested or concerned with what we're going through. But God has never promised that our lives would be empty of pain, disappointment, or storms. Anyone who tells you otherwise is not teaching the truth of the Bible. What God does promise are the resources to journey through the raging waters. The fact is that Jesus was right with them there in the boat, facing the exact same storm that the disciples were. So when we are in a storm, we may react with fear rather than faith. You see, soaked and no doubt shivering, terrified to the core, the men had been straining to keep the boat heading into the wind. They just knew that the next wave that was going to come along would take them to the bottom of the lake. They just knew. And in a near state of panic, the disciples approached the sleeping Jesus in the stern of the boat, and they're shouting to be heard above the wind and the waves. Now, as to what they actually said, the words differ slightly from one gospel account to the other. Matthew records that the disciples cried out, "Lord, save us, we're going to drown," which seems to be a cry for help. And our text, Luke, he has the disciples record as saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown," which is a statement of imminent doom. It's going to happen. And then Mark records that they said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Which almost makes it sound like the disciples are rebuking Jesus for his inaction. I believe that all three of those things could have been said, and in the moment, probably a whole bunch more stuff. You see, at that moment, faith was paralyzed by fear. You see, fear is like an anchor. It stops us dead in the water. They were afraid that all of them, including Jesus, was going to die. They were, of course, wrong. But so are we when we panic during those difficult times. In reality, their problem was not the storm that was raging around them, but the unbelief that was inside them. They made too much of the problem and too little of God's provision. You see, fear does that to us, doesn't it? It maximizes the problem, makes it seem like a great big thing, and it minimizes God and makes him seem so small. A little bit backward, isn't it? So when we are in a storm, we need to remember to cry out to our Father. To cry out is to assume that there is a God who cares, and who not only cares, but he's willing to act. Now, the deist, they assumed that God created the world and he set these certain processes in motion. And then he absconded, he left, leaving us to our own devices. Storms at sea? Well, sorry. There are certain natural laws which have been established. Certain climatic processes, and when they converge, there are storms. Not much you can do about it. But you know what? I am glad that I serve the God of the universe. He created the entire universe, and not only that, he is able to act upon it as he wills. As the great old hymn says so well, "When darkness veils his lovely face, I rest upon his unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds upon the veil." There's a true story of how the storms of life washed ruthlessly over a man named Horatio Spafford. Maybe you have heard of him. I'm just looking to see if any of you respond. Nope, no one's heard of him. Okay, you've heard of a song, don't worry. Some months prior to the great Chicago fire of 1871, he had invested heavily in property on the shore of Lake Michigan. But his holdings were completely wiped out by the fire. Shortly before that, he had experienced the death of his son. And desiring to break from all the stresses of life that were taking place around him for himself and his wife and his daughters, he planned to join D.L. Moody and Sankey in their evangelistic crusades that were taking place in Great Britain. So Spafford planned a European trip for his family. European vacation. In November of 1873, due to some last-minute business developments, he had to remain in Chicago. But he sent his wife and his girls on ahead of him, and he planned to join them in just a couple days. On November 22nd, the ship was struck by another vessel, and it sank in only 12 minutes. Several days later, the survivors, they finally land in Wells, and Miss Spafford, she immediately cabled her husband, and the telegraph began with just two words, saved alone. And then she went on to ask what she should do. Shortly after that, Spafford left to join his wife. And it's speculated that on the ocean, on the sea, near the area where it was thought that his four daughters had drowned, he penned these words, which describe both of his grief and his faith. When peace like a river attendeth my soul, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. See, when we're in the midst of a storm, it is faith that will keep you from being afraid. See, Jesus, he is unconcerned about the storm, the wind, the waves, the raging sea. But he is concerned about his frightened disciples, the ones who have ventured forth with him in this boat. The storm, it was necessary for their spiritual development. And so was the ensuing calm that was about to come. At their cry, he rouses himself, he gets himself up, he rebukes the waves and the wind, and then there is immediate calm. Jesus cares. He not only cares, but he acts and he saves. And he does the same today for us. I want you to notice some significant characteristics of how easily Jesus overcame the storm. First, Jesus, by a word, a command, he speaks it, and he brings the forces of nature into subjection to himself. He speaks it, and it's done. Notice how effectively it's done. The storm subsided, and all was calm. All three Gospels, they speak of a sudden, a miraculous calm that took place. In reality, this is the second miracle that took place. See, normally, in a storm, there's some considerable time that is required for the waves to subside. Even though the winds have long since diminished. See, this storm did not cease, and then the winds gradually returned to normal. He spoke it, and it was as if there had never, ever been a storm. Now, some have argued that Jesus didn't calm the storm. He simply calmed the fears of his disciples. Although it's true, as the contemporary song suggests, sometimes he calms the storm, and other times he calms his child. In this particular instance, Jesus calmed the sea in order that he might strengthen the faith of his disciples. See, we disappoint the Lord when we give into our fear. Jesus addresses his disciples and he says, "Where is your faith?" See, there's perhaps a little bit of irony in the fact that the storm did not disturb Jesus, but the unbelief of his disciples did. Although their fear was natural, they had no excuse for their lack of faith. Fear comes, and all reason for trust departs. See, all of our experiences of how God has worked in our lives in the past go out the door when we're faced with some storm, some trial. See, in the lives of the disciples, faith's absence or his presence was revealed in the traumas, in the storms of life. Is it that way with us as well? Where is our faith during the storms of life? It is in the crisis of life that reveals our faith. It's in the crisis. It's in the storms that we face a threefold challenge: to worry, to work, or to trust. When difficulties come, we can choose to worry, but we all know deep down inside that worry doesn't change anything, does it? When faced with adversity, we can try harder and harder. That's where I fit in. I'll find a way to fix it. When that drive up there, when all that stuff, the 10 days that my mom was in the hospital, I was talking, what more can we do? Let's do this, let's do this, and things. I just need to try harder. That is until we see that there is nothing more that we can do. And then we are faced with the conclusion that is absolutely out of our control. Jesus, take the wheel. I can't do it anymore. Or we can, in faith, fall before the Lord and ask for His help. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, Peter invites us to cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. See, Jesus longs for you to put your trust in Him. He can handle it. His shoulders are big enough to carry any storm, any burden, anything that we are faced with. He is the only one who can take us through the storm. Not over it, not around it, but through the storm. This morning, I don't know where you're at. I don't know if you're stuck right in the middle of a storm and you're ready to give up. Would you be willing to turn it over to Jesus? When difficulties come in your life, Jesus can handle it. He can take care of it for us. You see, there is a purpose in the storms.